So I like to start with just a quick hit on what is your ultimate vision with Bubble? What is it today? And then what's your goal with it 10 years down the line?
So we started Bubble 9 years ago with the goal of empowering non-technical founders to build their product without engineers. And it's still very much what we do today. And it's a hard problem, right? With saying that if you have the idea of the next Facebook, of the next Airbnb, you don't need to worry about having a technical founder. So that's what we do today. The goal 10 years from now is to not just do that with non-technical founders, but do that with anyone in need of software. So it's a pretty fundamental goal and a fundamental company that we're building here. We want to be the standard for building software for anyone in any kind of setting, from the smallest startups to the US government in need of software to someone in high school building a little thing for homework.
Nice. And so Bubble is kind of in my mind one of the main players in the no-code space. You also see some kind of more specific tools that add automations onto it, like an Airtable, and then you see some other kind of no-code builders like Retool that's kind of meant for more internal. How do you think about how Bubble's positioned in the market?
So I think we've chosen the hardest problem to solve, which is enable people to build customer-facing, fully functional, fully flexible tools. And that's why we went with non-technical founders, because most non-startup founders have a product that is different from another one. Like, there are similarities, but it's always pretty unique. And what they're trying to build on our platform has to be blazing fast, a beautiful user experience, and white labeled. And so a big difference compared to all the other tools you just mentioned is that they're not white labeled because they are for internal use cases. So it's fine if it looks because it's serving your employees. Here, I want someone to build Airbnb and people don't know it's built on no code. It's a harder problem to solve, but if we solve it right, then we're changing software forever.
Yeah, one of the interesting things that I love about your guys' approach is the marketplace that you're building. So I think one of the key drivers for the success of like a Shopify or a WordPress was the plugin ecosystem they were able to build. How have you guys thought about building your plugin ecosystem? I know Bubble has some of their own plugins they put on there. And have you been, happy with the growth you've seen there?
Yeah, we've actually not built the marketplace to make money. We built a marketplace, or more importantly, I would say the plugin infrastructure, because it's a way to remove limitations when you hit some on Bubble. So today, Bubble is actually limitless because if something is missing, you can write code and use it as a plugin. And so it was once we started opening that door, it made sense to just having people share plugins on their own. Most of the plugins we currently have on the marketplace are actually free. But then, when people do work, it's fair for them to be compensated for it. So we created a way for people to monetize this thing. In terms of growth, I mean, it grew with our users. So growth has been good because the last year has been very good for us. It's not something we've been pushing extremely hard on so far. What's more important for us today is just maximize the number of people that know how to use Bubble. And so if they know how to use Bubble, then they'll end up creating an app and paying for the main product and they'll buy plugins.
Nice. There's kind of a debate I've noticed with no coders and coders about whether there will be more or less developers as a result of no coding tools. I'm assuming you're pretty opinionated on that topic. How do you think about that if tools like Bubble will automate away developers' jobs or if it'll just make more and more powerful developers?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not worried at all for developers, like coders, they will always find jobs. In fact, the biggest impact of a company like ours is that we are finally going to free the time of expensive coders so that they can work on more important things. I would argue that the fact that every SaaS company out there has an engineer putting together a login system is a waste of resources for the world. Code will be useful in any place and not just consumer web, right? And so I'd rather have these people write code for actual problems and instead get business people build a product for the things that are often reinventing the wheel.
So you said you've been running the company for 9 years. What's kind of the biggest problem you're focused on at this phase of Bubble?
Currently, we're very much into scaling and expansion mode and building the team. We're currently 40 people, probably going to end the year like 60 or 70, and make sure that we get our communication, marketing, go-to-market, and educational efforts in place so that more people understand how Bubble is different from the other tools. And on the product side, making sure we can keep up with the growth, not just our growth, but also the growth of our users, because we have a compound effect here. The promise we're making to people when they start a company on top of Bubble is to tell them you can stay with us at scale. And that takes a lot of work, and that's where we put a lot of our engineering resources.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. So now that you have all this experience, what do you think you could have told yourself back when you were starting out that would have been the most helpful piece of advice?
I wish someone had told me it's going to be longer than you think, because I did not expect that at first. When I started in 2012, I didn't think it would take 9 years to get where we are today. And looking retrospectively, I'm sure we made a few mistakes here and there, and that we could have gone faster, but I don't think we could have gone, three times faster. Like, we wouldn't have done in 3 years what we have done in nine. But I guess the advice being, be patient. And the question is, when should you stop, right? Because it's not like life is unlimited. My take is, as long as you're having fun with what you do and you're creating value, then it's a good sign you should keep going. Creating value doesn't necessarily mean, by the way, wealth. In our case, because the first 5 years were only Josh and I, like, there was no wealth really at that point. We would not even take a salary. But the value we were creating for our users was very obvious, because they kept telling us. I mean, we knew that without us, their businesses would not be existing. And that was, for us, a very important source of satisfaction. And that's what kept us going.
Yeah, so the company was bootstrapped for a while, right? Before you took on funding,
Seven years, yes.
7 years. So what was your motivation to flip the switch and say, we want to go into growth mode after kind of, I don't know if it was comfortably running in bootstrap mode for so long?
The motivation was twofold. Personally, internally to the business, we realized that we could, which was not true before. One of the big challenges with what we do at Bubble is that there is a lot of skepticism around no code. Today, no code is kind of hot, and so people look at that with a little bit, more welcoming eyes. But ask an engineer what he thinks, and he will tell you that, oh, no, you can't use this, right? And so as a result, you don't want to go to market too soon, where your product is not fully baked, because you're going to have to fight the skepticism. And when people say, well, okay, can you do this? And you say no, you're going to reinforce the skepticism. So we had to wait for the product to be powerful enough that we could say, no, actually, yeah, you want to do that? Yes, you can. And that took us some time. And so as soon as we had that realization that now we were mostly saying yes when people would ask questions, we were like, okay, now we're ready to grow faster. And
That's
then the
good.
external factor was the market was just much more active in the space, and people were trying to start to be more visible and trying to be like shape the narrative of what no code is about. And so we felt like, we should have our say in this, because we are actually one of the earlier players in the space. So we have strong opinions on what no code should be.
Yeah, no, I remember using Bubble in high school, and I've graduated college now. And so I remembered you guys have been around for a long time. And so it was interesting to kind of see you guys making a giant push recently. So it sounds like what you're saying is that when you started the company, maybe the timing wasn't necessarily there for like hyper growth, but you stayed around long enough to
And by
ride
the
it
way,
out.
it's not just us. Look at Webflow, Notion, Airtable. All these companies have not grown quickly at first. It takes some time to build a product.
So do you have any advice for how to do that? Because bootstrapping for 7 years, were you slightly profitable with the revenue you had from your clients?
I mean, this is the old way to build a business, right? In many ways, I think it's more respectable than trying to raise money. It's, create a product, sell it, your customers see some values, they give you some money, you use that money to build a team, you create a better product, you have more users. Businesses have been run that way for like thousands of years.
So, I mean, there's always the grass is greener syndrome. So what do you miss from the 12 person days, and what's your favorite part now that you're scaling up? I think you guys have over like 100 people now.
40 people, actually. But
40
yeah. So what I miss, I guess, is, being able to all be in one little room. I know in COVID times, it doesn't really make sense, but even before COVID, it was still, having everyone knowing each other very well and being extremely driven. And, you just say, hey, what do you think of that? And that's, very fast and, yeah, very quick to make decisions. You have that a little bit less with 40 people, even though 40 is not that big. On the flip side, what is great today is we can now decide, okay, we want to solve that problem. Let's put resources on this and see what happens. And that's a very enjoyable. We can make bets, which is a very fun thing to do as a business.
So if you were starting your career today, what space would you go into? Would you go into no code, or is there something new that's now in the kind of emerging part of the cycle that no code was in 10 years
I
ago?
think no code is one of the most exciting things we can work on today. And I would actually argue that my hope for no code is that 5 years from now, we don't talk about no code. I just hope this is, the way to build things. And so working on something as fundamental as Bubble is very exciting. So if I were graduating college, I hope I would be doing what I'm doing today.
That's awesome. So with Bubble, the product, what's the biggest limitation you see right now that's kind of stopping it from being the default way to build applications?
For us, it's two things: improving education, like improving how people can learn the product efficiently, which means changing a little bit the product, but not just that. And then having more success stories. At some point, again, no code is cool, but skepticism is still high when you tell people to actually build real things, especially for us, because we chose the hardest thing to do. Like if you do internal, like what Retool is doing is very impressive, but if it goes wrong internally, it's a problem, but it's not like, life-threatening for the business. For us, it is. Like if we go back, if we have a bug, like our users' entire business operation stops and what the customers would see goes down, and that's really bad. And so we need more success stories to instill a little bit more trust, make it clear that this is a new way to build things. Once we solve that, and we'll solve that with time, right? And more users doing well, and us being more visible, and us growing at some point, if we raise money, for instance, one of the good things for that for us is that then people will take us more seriously as a reliable platform. That will help a lot with adoption.
Nice. So, have you done things to kind of like help your biggest customers grow? Are you kind of trying to help them along? And maybe what are some of those stories of the big successes on Bubble right now?
We don't have a structure in place like to help them grow. We actually thought about putting together a Bubble fund or something, trying to find them resources, which I think is something we'll do as soon as we can. Like we have a couple
Yeah,
of
that's
things to do
super
before
smart.
that. But what we do is that what I can say that when our bigger users reach out to us, we put people on to help them, whether it's success engineers or even growth. Because at the end of the day, our incentives are extremely well aligned. Like if a company does well on us, it helps us. So if you're a big customer and you reach out with a bug, the bug will get escalated pretty quickly. Because we'd certainly, I'm not sure we have the structure today and the resources to start setting up, a growth consulting firm to help our users grow, but we certainly can do a lot of things to make sure the product is very smooth for them and scales well with them. That's a big thing. And the example I share all the time, it's a pretty old one. He's a 6-year-old company, still running on Bubble today. I think 2 years ago, they told us they processed over $1 billion of business volume. It's a pretty complicated on the platform. Today, it's probably two, honestly. I don't know, I haven't checked. Where they built like a pretty complicated web application where people could apply to get financing for solar panel installations on their roof. And so it's a pretty complicated web app that they've built on us. We have in Paris a company that has doubled its annual recurring revenue and raised like a $3 million seed round that is growing very quickly, actually pretty well known in Paris. In many ways, though, a lot of our successes also do not necessarily involve like fundraising or like, startup thing. It's more, we're going a little bit, our goal is also to help people that do not have access to these kind of channels, like fundraising channels and stuff like this. And so there are companies and there are people that reach out to us who just build a little bootstrap business that works for them and their team, and they're doing very well. And we know that they would not, they tell us, and we know that they would not exist if we were not there. And in many ways, it's more cool than a company having raised a lot of money.